Okay, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Sukkah Daf Chaf Aleph, the first full daf of the second parak of Masechta Sukkah. Today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander in honor of his wife and children, also by Seymour Gertz and family in memory of Seymour's father, Rav Aryeh Leib ben Rabbi Eliezer Isaac, Alav HaShalom, whose yard site was on Yud Zayin Av, and also Lila Nishmas Leo Rappaport, Yehuda Aryeh ben Yitzchak Kakoin, whose yard site is today, the Neshama Shev and Aliyah. We thank all of the sponsors very much for the sponsorship. So we're holding toward the bottom of Daf, Chaf Amud Beis. We just read the first line, really, after the Mishnah, and the Gemara is going to discuss an ohel ha'asui bidei adam. If you have an ohel that's made by man, whether that's considered an ohel. Now that is a sugya in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. It is not a sugya in Maseches Sukkah. But since one of the rayos is from our Mishnah, so that's why we bring up the issue of ohel ha'asui bidei adam. The Gemara is going to, in that context of the discussion of ohel ha'asui bidei adam, discuss how they would secure the water that they used to make the Efer Para Aduma if it had to be absolutely tar, so it couldn't come in contact with the person who was Tameh. So the lengths that they would go to make sure that the person who would go and fetch that water would be someone who was never Tameh Lemeis. Then on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to discuss how it could be that Rabbi Yehuda slept under a bed in the Sukkah, because the Gemara tells us that he did, and we're going to have two explanations of what allowed him to do such a thing. And the Gemara is going to tell us that we learned a couple of things from Rabbi Gamliel's comments about Tavi Avdo, that he said about his Eved Tavi, what a Talmud Chachami is, that he knows that an Eved is Patur min HaSukkah, and that's why he slept under a bed. So we're going to learn a couple of things from that comment of Rabbi Gamliel, and then the Mishnah at the end of the Daf is going to discuss a Schach that rests on bedposts, and two reasons why Rabbi Yehuda might passel Schach that rests directly on the bedpost. One reason is going to be that it's Ein Lakeva, and the other reason is going to be that it's a Maimed B'davra Mekabel Tumah, which is a whole sugya into itself as far as the Halacha is concerned, whether Maimed B'davra Mekabel Tumah is a problem and just how much of a problem that might be. So let's begin. Again, we're holding on the bottom of Daf Chaf Amud Beis. We read the first line after the Mishnah, and now we're going to discuss Olel HaAsu B'dei Adam. So at Tanan HaSam, last run line is Tanan HaSam, Echad Chur Shecharu Mayim, whether you have a cavity or a hole that's made by water flowing through a certain location, oh, Shratzim, or it's made by Shratzim that eat through a certain area, oh, Shachatu Malachas, or maybe there's some very strong minerals or salt that eats through a certain area and creates a cavity, V'chein Mad V'chavanim, or sometimes you have a lot of stones that are lined up next to each other, but they're not perfectly aligned, so you have one stone here, one there, and another one hovering on top of the two, and makes like a triangle, and it creates a little bit of a hole underneath the one that's on top, V'chein Tzor Shalkaras, or if you have a bunch of beams that are lined up next to each other, where again there could be that there's a gap under one of the beams between two of the beams. So it's ma'ilala tuma. All of those things create an ohel. So if there's if in that cavity, in that gap, you have a little bit of tuma and something else, there is an ohel, and therefore that something else becomes tame, assuming that it's kazayis min ames or something that's metame ba ohel. Rabbi Yehuda Omer kol ohel sheino asu b'dei adam eino ohel. And Rabbi Yehuda says no, none of this is an ohel because all of these are natural phenomena. None of these are made by man. Only man-made ohalim are considered ohalim. So none of this is considered an ohel. So there you have it. That's the machlokas in the Mishnah, whether an ohel asu bidei adam is considered an ohel or not. Again, nothing to do with Maseches Sukkah, except that one of the rayas we're going to bring in this machlokas is from our Mishnah, and that's why we brought this up. So my time at Rabbi Yehuda, where does Rabbi Yehuda even get the idea that in order for something to qualify as an ohel in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, it's necessary that it be asu bidei Adam? So Yalif Oel Oel Mi Mishkan. We learn Oel Oel from Mishkan. Ksiv HaChazos HaTara Adam Kiyamos Ba'Oel, when it comes to the Oel HaMeis by Parshas Chukas. It says Zos HaTara Adam Kiyamos Ba'Oel, it refers to it as an Oel. Uksiv HaSam, and when it comes to the Mishkan, it says Ve'Yifros HaOel Ala Mishkan, that it's the Oel that is spread over the Mishkan. So Mala Halan Bidei Adam, Afkan Bidei Adam, just like the Mishkan is an Oel that's made Bidei Adam, so too when it comes to Oel HaMeis, it's only considered an Oel if it's made Bidei Adam. One of the Achronim raises the question, the Emek Sukkah says, well, wait a second, there's a Medrash Rabbah in Parshas Pikudei that says that the Mishkan was omed Me'atzmo, that Moshe Rabbeinu did not actually erect the Mishkan, that he brought everything to place, and then on its own it just stood up. So that's really not an Oel Asa Bidei Adam either, meaning if you take that Medrash literally, then the Mishkan itself is an Oel Asa Bidei Shemayim, and and it's not an oil loss of Adam. So how could that be the whole basis of Rabbi Dushita? So he says, no, all the Medrash says that the boards of the Mishkan were all made b'fnei atzmo. It doesn't say that the urios that overhang the Mishkan, that was served as the roof of the Mishkan, were all made b'fnei atzmo. That may be the Moshe Rabbeinu put up, or the B'nai Yisrael themselves put up, and that maybe did not happen b'dei Shemayim. Okay, so that's how Rabbi Yehuda derives it. He derives from the Mishkan that an ohel b'dei Adam is not considered an ohel. How are the Rabbanan going to respond to that? V'Rabbanan ohel, ohel riba. The Rabbanan say, you look through the parsha of Tumah in the Torah, of Tumah's ohel, and it keeps on using the word ohel over and over again, apparently trying to expand the definition of ohel beyond what its normal definition is. Meaning, ain't a chinami. From Mishkan, you see that only an ohel asa b'dei Adam is considered an ohel. But the fact that the Torah keeps on repeating the word ohel tells you that in the context of Tumah, that in the context of Tumah, there is more that's considered an ohel. And therefore, even an ohel asa b'dei Shemayim is considered an ohel. So now that we know the machlokas and we know what it's based on, so says the Gemara, is it really true that Rabbi Yehuda holds an ohel that's not asa b'dei Adam is not really an ohel? V'savar Rabbi Yehuda, kol ohel shein asa b'dei Adam ain't an ohel. Does Rabbi Yehuda really hold such a shita that an ohel that's not asa b'dei Adam is not considered an ohel? Uriminu al askiu stira chatzeros hayibnuyos v'yushalayim al gabei asela. They used to have, in order to secure water to make the mechatas, to mix with the ashes of the paraduma, to make sure that they had the purest possible water, they used to go through an extreme amount of trouble in order to make sure that the person that would go and get that water was absolutely tar. So we're about to read about the extreme amount of trouble that they went through. It's a mishnah in the third parak of Maseches Parah. Why did they go through all of this trouble? So Rashi explains that the halacha is on a daraisa level that a tevul yom is allowed to come in contact with the water. Even a person who was tameh but has gone to the mikveh and is just waiting for his harav shemesh is a tevul yom, who has some level of tumah, is not tameh enough to cause a problem. So since we have this tremendous kula that a tevul yom is, we don't want people to be mezalzel, then we say, oh, tevul yom, so the tumah is not such a big deal. So we go to such a great extent to show that it's the biggest deal, that we change people's lives based on the desire to secure the water betara. It's interesting, Rashi over here, if I'm not mistaken, does not mention anything about the tztukim, but elsewhere, in Yuma, we do say it explicitly when we talk about the milos that we do is because of the tztukim, that the tztukim would hold. He does mention, he says tztukim. I didn't look carefully. Okay, so because the tztukim used to say that a tevul yom is they held that a tevul yom is tamei for these purposes. So dafka we need it. We were makbid to use a tevul yom. So since we're makbid to use a tevul yom, so that's why we had to go to such great extent. So because by the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur the same thing that we would be metame the Kohen Gadol and Yom Kippur in order that he would be a tevul yom at the time of the avodah, so we'd go to such a great extent. So says the Gemara. So Urminu chatzeros ha'ibnus b'Yerushalayim. They had these chatzeros that were built in Yerushalayim al gabei asela. They were over a cliff. V'tachteim chalal mibnei kevrat ha'om. And the cliff had a huge gap between the ground underneath it and the overhang of the cliff, so that in case there's any tumah in the ground underneath it, the tumah would stop at the bottom of the cliff because the cliff formed an ohel, so it would stop the tumah. Umavi and nashim uvros v'yoldos sham, and they would bring pregnant women to give birth. They would have like a birthing center on the top of that cliff, and that's where they would give birth. Umagadlos b'neim sham lepara, and they would raise their children there in order that those children should be the ones that are involved in the para aduma. Umavi and shvarin, and they would bring these oxen, valgabeim delosos, and they would put doors over the backs of the oxen, vitinokos yoshon al gabeim, and they'd have children sitting on the top of these doors, vikosos shall even be adayim, and they would hold kosos made out of stone, which are not mekabel tumah, higil l'shiloach, they would then get to the shiloach where they needed to get the water from, yardu l'toch hamayim, and at that point, the children would get off of the oxen, would get off of the doors, and they would go into the water, umilim, and they would fill it up, fill up the cups with water, and then they would climb back up to the top of the ox. Now apparently Tanakama is not worried about that one moment of time where they're going to be off of the back of the ox and they're going to be getting the water, either because it's very abnormal for people to bury their dead in the water, right? So it's unlikely that there are dead bodies in the water, or because we dafka have to be makbid, that the Tanakhama holds that they have, that being mishalshel with the rope is not called filling up the water. That to do the maisa, filling up the water, it requires a direct maisa. Rabbi Yossi Omer, but Rabbi Yossi disagrees, and he says that they would stay on top of the ox, they would never go down, they would lower it with a, lower the cup down with the rope, and then lift up the cup full of water, because they are concerned about kever hatahom. So the Tanya and the Braisa on that Mishnah tells us that Rabbi Yehuda says, nah, you don't need to bring a delis to put on the back of the ox. The ox itself forms an ol, because the ox's body is more than a tefach wide, so it itself forms an ol. So Frekli Gemara, really? According to Rabbi Yehuda, an ox is an ol? Vashvarim da ol sheino asibidei adam, an ox is an ol, that's not asibidei adam, it's a naturally made ol. V'ketani, Rabbi Yehuda amar lo yamavin d'lasos el shvarim, and it says that Rabbi Yehuda says that they didn't bring d'lasos, they didn't make a man-made ol, they relied on the ol that was the ox. So how can we say that Rabbi Yehuda holds that an ol asibidei adam is not considered an ol? Because after all, we learn from the Mishkan that only an ol asibidei adam is an ol. Over here in Maseches Para, we apparently see that an ol asibidei adam is considered an that an ol sheino asibidei adam is considered an ol. Says the Gemara, Kiyas Rav Dimi Amar Blazar Mod Rabbi Yehuda Kimelo Egrov. Even though Rabbi Yehuda generally holds that an ol that's not asibidei adam is not considered an ol, that's only if it's a minimal ol. If it's just one tefach by one tefach, it's a one tefach cube. That's a tiny little ol. That needs to be also bedeldom to be considered an ohel. But over here, it's if it's a much larger ohel, it's the size of a melo egrov, however big that is. Rashi writes, kemelo egrov, ol sharachav kemelo egrov, shu yoser mi tefach. It's more than a tefach. That's the whole point, that it's a larger ohel than moda Rabbi Yehuda, shalt pishen also bedeldom, chashulios ohel. Then Rabbi Yehuda is going to be moda, that even if it's not also bedeldom, then it will be considered an ohel. So so you see that, and Tanya Nami Achi, we have a Bryce that supports this answer. Umod Rabbi Yehuda b'shkifin ubenekike haslaim, that Rabbi Yehuda's moda by shkifin and nekike haslaim, which presumably are larger than a melo egrov, and since they're larger than a melo egrov, mimele they're considered an ol regardless of how they're made. Now a couple of points over here. First of all, if you look in Tosfos Mavi Nashim Ubros V'Yoldo, says Tosfos Af Pishayu Tinokos Temei and Benida V'Yoldos Loi Choshen El Shomer Mitumas Meis. These children were taken care of by their mothers, who were had tumas yoledas and had tumas nida. Nevertheless, that's not a problem, because the concern is just to protect them from tumas meis. We had to make sure they were young enough that they were not balei keri. They would only raise them until they were 7 or 8 years old over there, shelo yiru keri, because once they're already 9 years old, then they might have tumas keri, and then that's going to apostle them. So it says, and then what? Meaning, what happens after that? So the kids bring the water, and then what? Then you're going to have to be mekadesh the mayim with the Efer Chatas. Who's going to do that? So that's going to be done by an adult. So anyway, you're going to have an adult involved who was not raised on that sela, and who definitely had access to men, could definitely be a balkari. So what do we do about that? So he says, so he says, no, this is the whole point, that the reason we're going to such great lengths is it's a statement. It's not because we can guarantee 100% that there is no tumah. We'll never be able to guarantee 100% that there's no tumah, but we're making a statement about how seriously we're taking it. So this is enough of a statement, even though enochinami, the next step, cannot live up to the same standard, but we're making a statement. Lahotzi miliban shall tzedukim, and that's the purpose of what we're doing over here. Now the reason that they have to put the losos, according to the Tanakhama, Rashi writes in Maseches Vachim, it's to be mafsik between the ragleim shel hatinokos. Meaning, why is the Tanakhama not happy with just using the ox itself? It says because the kid's legs will overhang the side of the ox, and then the legs of the kid will become tameh, and they'll be be metame the kid. We're afraid that that's going to happen. So the Rambam Perusha Mishnayis and Maseches Parah and in Hilchos Parah Adum Perek Beis Halacha Zayin says no. Even though they would take very wide oxen, and therefore even the Raglei Atinok would not go over the Kever Atom, they still brought the Lassos in order to make a wider Ohel. So Sfasema says, well, why? Why did they need the Lassos? Why not just use the width of the oxen? And he leaves it as a Tzaruch Iyun. So the Chassid David, he said that according to the Rambam, the fact that Tanakhama requires these boards, is because of a Maili Yaseira, it's not Medina, in a Chinami, there's nothing that could happen. So it's Rashi who says that the boards are an extra precaution, that are actually a realistic precaution, that the legs of the child might be Mahil over Tuma. Whereas the Rambam Shita is not. It's never going to happen. These are giant oxen. These are little kids. So it's not going to be. Their legs aren't going to go over the sides of the oxen to the point where they would become Tame. It's just another Chumrah to add that it's an even wider Ohel by making Delassos. The Ritva says that the reason they use Dafka doors, why Delassos? Just say, take a mat, take a board, why do we say Dafka a door? So he says, a door doesn't have any Tumah, because if they would put Nisarim, if they would put Stam boards, that's Metame Medras, because it's Asuyimli Yeshiva. Nisarim might be made for sitting on, so it would be something that's Mekabal Tumas Medras. A door is part of the Chumrah, that a door is not Mekabal Tumah at all, because it's not made to be a Medras. The Mishnah Achrona says that they took doors, because doors are Miyuchad for Tashmish Karka. They're Miyuchad to be Mechuber Bebinyan. They're made to be attached to the ground, and anything that's also the karka is not mekabel tuma, even if it's eino mechuber, but it's made to be mechuber, so it's not going to be mekabel tuma. So for those reasons, they took these doors. Now the Rokeach raises a fascinating question over here. He says, "Well, wait a second. What did we do over here? We would take this woman who's the Rokeach doesn't raise a question. The Achronim raise a question, but based on the sheet of the Rokeach. The Rokeach has a sheet that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, quoted by the Shach in Shulchan Aruch, that a pregnant Eishes Kohen is allowed to go into Ohel HaMeis because of a Sfek Sveka. That maybe the baby's a girl, and even if the baby's a boy, maybe it's a Nefel, and the baby's not going to make it. So because of a Sfek Sveka, that's why a pregnant Eishes Kohen is allowed to go into an Ohel HaMeis. So the assumption the Rokeach seems to be working with, it's a difficult assumption, but the assumption he seems to be working with, and the Shach quotes it, is that the baby can become Tamei. Meaning if you had a sonogram and you see that it's a boy, then the woman is not allowed to go into the cemetery, because you see that the baby is going to become Tamei, leaving aside all the Minhagim and heebie-jeebie stuff about pregnant women going into cemeteries. So halacha, right? That the baby can become tamei even inside the womb. So now the Achronim raises the question: if that's really true, that the baby can become tamei, what are we helping by bringing pregnant women to this cliff and having them give birth there? Too late! They've already been pregnant. They were already off the cliff. The baby could have become tamei previously. So there are a number of answers that the Achronim give. In the Mishmaris Kuhuna, he says, based on the Tosos, that Erechinami, we are choshish for such a thing. But Masha Yachol Asakein Misakein, like we just saw in the Tosos. The Tosos said when it came to who's going to be dealing with the Mechatas after the child is done with it and is actually mixing it. So whatever we could be Misakein, we're Misakein. Say in a Chinami, we should be Choshish, but there's only so much you could do. In the Chadre Deya, he says a Chiddush based on Tosos and Nida Daf Ayin. He says the Ben Ashunamis that Elisha was Mechai is not Metame, he's considered Bria Chadasha. So he says, it could be that an Uber, when he's born, becomes a Bria Chadasha and is not Tamei, even though he was Nitma B'mei Imo. I mean, the Ben HaShemesh was dead, so he was dead. He was Tamei, obviously. And then when he came back to life, so did he still have Tumas Meis? He didn't go through a Tara process, so no, it's a Bria Chadasha. And as Bria Chadasha, the Tumma just goes away on its own. So that's what the Chedri Deya suggests in Simen Shinayin Aleph, that when the Eino Chinami, the baby inside, is Tamei, and you're just not allowed to be Metamei, a Kohen, even if it's a Katan, you're not allowed to be Metamei him. But once he's born, the Tumma goes away. It's Parech. Yeah, Rav Chaim Eizer and Achiezer and Chel Gimel Simen Samachay, Rav Shach always quotes this, points out that the pashtus is that even though the Rokeach is telling you that a pregnant Kohen should not go into an Ohel HaMeis if you know that the baby is a boy and the only reason it's allowed to is because of a Sfek Sveka, it's not really Tamei. The child does not actually become Tamei. the child becomes, you're not supposed to do it, meaning there's a separate Isser called Hiskarvus Lemes, meaning that the Isser of Tumas Kohanim is not only that a Kohen is not allowed to become Tameh, is that a Kohen is not allowed to have too close of a Sheichus with Misa, too close of a Sheichus with a Mace. And that's the issue over here, because it can't become Tameh. There's something called Tumah Balua. Tumah Balua is not Metameh. If you have something that's totally enclosed in something else and has no exposure to the outside atmosphere, so that's Balua. That doesn't become Tameh. So it doesn't make any sense that the baby would become Tameh if it was inside the mother's womb. In terms of Dine Tumah, in terms of Hilchos Tumah, it wouldn't make sense that it become Tameh. But you do have this broader principle that a Kohen, so that's how Rav Shechter writes in Big Fayatzon, he explains many shittos like this. That's why there's a din that a Kohen is not allowed to be in a room with a goses. So is it only a chashash that the goses might die? So and then he'll become Tameh? It seems not that way, because there are shittos in Rishonim, I think, maybe even Tanaim, shittos in Rishonim that even amongst the Zion Krovim, a Kohen shouldn't be in a room with a goses. Whoa, amongst the Zion Krovim? Why in the world, what in the world would be the problem? If the person dies, he's allowed to be there. So why can't he be in a room with a goses? Elamai, the din of goses is not a din of Tumah. The goses himself is not Tameh, but it's Hiskarvus Lemeis. It's closeness to Misa. That's what Rav Shechter thought, that maybe that's the heter for Kohanim to fly in airplanes that may go over a cemetery. That Enechinami Midine Tumah, you may not be able to explain how the Kohen is not becoming Tameh, but there's no Hiskarvus Lemeis. And the Gedder of the Isser is not really Tumas Kohanim, it's what we call Tumas Kohanim, but it's really an Indian of Hiskarvus Lemeis. Many rayas that he has. You take a look in Big Fayatzon, you see many rayas. But that's the idea, that's how it comes from Chaim Eizer. Many other Gedolim had this idea that it's not only about Tumas Kohanim, it's about Hiskarvus Lemeis. So says the Gemara now, Vaharei Delas Diyesh Makama Egrofin, but wait a second, what's the rule we're saying now according to Rabbi Yehuda? That an Oel Bidei Adam is always an Oel. If it's an Oel Bidei Shemayim, then only if it's big enough. It's got to be bigger than just the Tevuk Bayit Tevuk. It's got to be the Melo Egrof. And only then is an Oel Bidei Shemayim considered an Oel. The Delas has Kama Egrofin. The Katani Rabbi Yehuda Amar Loyim Avin Vlasasel Shvarim. And the Mishnah says that according to Rabbi Yehuda, they would not bring the Lasos. Sounds like you're not allowed to bring the Lasos. At least the Gemara and the Hava, when it's asking this question, is assuming that Rabbi Yehuda holds that the Delas doesn't work. So that's why Loyim Avin Vlasos. Well, why wouldn't the Delas work? It's Yesh Mokameh Grofin, it's big enough. So even if it's considered that it's Asimide Shemaim, it would be considered an Ohel. So Amr Abai Lahutsuku Lahavid Lasos. No. All Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that it's not necessary to bring the Lasos, but not that you're not allowed to bring Dlasos. If you look at Tosos in Vaharei, he says, Tema hechi salkadaita demaksha shloyo ilu Dlasos. V'lo bidei adamu, demidas v'nchul l'shem ha'ol. He says, I don't even understand the Havamina. Rabbi Yehuda Shita is that an Ohel asu bidei Shemayim needs to be kama egrofin. An Ohel asu bidei adam could be even just a tefach. This Delas is anyway an Ohel asu bidei adam. People would put the Delas on the back of Behema. Animals don't grow with doors on their backs. That's something that was also bidei adam. V'ol meiz etam yesh l'shvarim. No, Yosem and Lassos. And also, how could there be a Havamina that the ox itself is a better Ohel than the door that's on its back? So Bakunchus Pirush Kasalka Daitim Shum De Ain Derachol Bakach Kolshke Shvarim Ulfisa Tikshle Higufa. He said, and the Rashi says that it's Ain Derachol Bakach, and Kal V'Chomer, an ox is Ain Derachol Bakach. So why don't we ask about the ox? So Vitzarik Lomer to Kasalka Daitim to Bali Chaim Chashivi LaHatzel Tvei Mid Lassos Lichashiv Ohel. Afal pishein derachol b'kach v'lo shayich tamze al b'davar atoli b'svara v'lo l'may di alfinan mimishkan. He says it must be that the havamina is that palichayim are considered a stronger form of oel than doors are, even though it's not derach oel b'kach, because of the chashivus of palichayim, and so they're a stronger form of oel, and the therefore it's not subject to those rules that we learn from the mishkan. But anyway, that's Abaye's answer. Abaye says, no, it just means you don't have to bring Vlasos, but you're allowed to bring Vlasos. Rava Amar Loi Mavin Vlasos Kal Iker, they wouldn't bring doors. Shemnesha Daito Shaltino Gasa Alav, because they're afraid that if they would bring doors, the child would have too much confidence riding on the back of the animal, and Shemiyotzi Rosho Echame Varavi Yitame Bekever Hatom, and we're afraid that he's going to stick out one of his limbs because he's going to feel very comfortable. Meaning on the animal's back, he feels a little unstable. But if he's on the back of a door, he's got this flat surface, he's going to feel very comfortable and confident, and he's going to start sticking out his limbs, and he's going to become Tame. So that's why there's a concern. Now, if you look at the bottom of Tosos, Shadaitu Shotino Gasalov, says Tosos, Kosov Rabbi Yudah Oel Zaruk Shmei Ohel. Demashma Halom Ibn Shadaitu. Sounds like an Oel Zaruk counts as an Oel, because it sounds like the what we're saying is that the doors would have been a perfectly viable Oel, even though they're moving, even though he's moving on the back of the animal, it would have been a perfectly viable Oel. So even a moving Oel does count as an Oel, it does qualify as an Oel. Now that comment is an important comment to Tosos, because in the debut there's a famous tshuva in Madura Tinyana or Chaim Simon Lamed, where he talks about whether you're allowed to use umbrellas on Shabbos. And he describes how an umbrella works, and it seems not exactly, it wasn't like they would just push a button and go like that and the whole thing would open up. It was all a complicated process to open up an umbrella and these primitive umbrellas. But whoever asked the Shaila had a certain svara to be makel. And he said, I mean, what's the issue with opening umbrellas? Is that you're making an Oel on Shabbos, that Asiyas Oel Arai on Shabbos is bona midrabanan. It's a violation of binyan on a Durabanan level, so it's a violation of Asiyas Ohel. So one of the reasons for Hetet that the fellow suggested, that the person suggested, was that since you're walking with the rainbow, with the umbrella, it's not standing in one place, so you don't consider that an Ohel. So an Ohel is only if it's a Mahil in one location, just like Ohel Zaruk, and that it's not Omid B'Makom Echad, and therefore it's not considered an Ohel. So the Yudah rejects that taina, because in our sugi we say that when they would bring the mayim for the paraduma, they would have all of these chumros, and when they wanted to be maza on the kohen who was being sorif, they would bring shvarim because of the oxen have wide bellies, and they would put the delossos over the oxen in order to protect from keverat ha'om and the kosos shalevin, etc. So Tosus raises the question that according to the shita that all zaruk is eino oel, the shvarim are not chotzis b'fnei ha'tuma, because in all zaruk the shvarim are not staying in one place, they're mahalich. So Tosos writes in Dibra Maschel Va'al Gabeya, in earlier Tosos, he points out that that according to the Shita, that Ol Zaruk is, the Tosos says that there's a special din by an ox that even though it's an Ol Zaruk, it's considered an Ohel because the Pasuk describes it as an Ohel. So you see that Or and Basar are considered to be a form of Schach, even though the Baal Chai is constantly moving around. So that Pasuk is about a human being, but we see it about all living creatures that it would have a din of an ohel. So Batosos raises the question that works very well when you're talking about the oxen themselves, that they have a din of an ohel because there's a special gilui in the pasuk that is considered an ohel even though it's zaruk. But what about the doors that they would put on the back of the oxen where the tinokos would stand? Those delossos are also an ohel zaruk, and there's no pasuk that tells me that those still count as an ohel. So how could they be chotzis b'fnei atuma? So Tosos quotes from Rashba that since the delossos are put al gabe ashvarim that themselves have a din of an ohel, they are also are considered an ohel zark. The ox, even though it's an ohel zark, is considered an ohel. So the doors on the back of the oxen are also considered an ohel. So says the Nadibuda, who adin when it comes to an umbrella, that since a person is holding the umbrella and the person has a din of an ohel, so that which is attached to the person, that's connected to the person, that's being moved around, will also have a din of an Ohel, even though it's an Ohel Zaruk, and therefore there's no heter to open up the umbrella on Shabbos. However, in the Tshuvas Chacham Sofer and Archaim Simonayim Beis, he says you don't need to be Matar Mishum Ohel Zaruk, there are other reasons to be Matar anyway, with opening up an umbrella on Shabbos. So even though to carry an umbrella on Shabbos is Lav Mishnas Chasidimi, it's not appropriate, it's not the right thing to do, says and Shomer Nafsho Yerchak Mea, we don't do things that are Ruv D'Dechol or whatever else, that don't look like Shabbos activities. Nevertheless, there's no Isidor Raisa B'davar, and you're not going to say that it's a real Malacha. Lemaisa, though, all the Gedolei Hadoros have said we don't open umbrellas on Shabbos, even though there's good reason to argue that maybe it would not be a technical violation of the Halacha, but that's our practice, is we don't open umbrellas on Shabbos. We don't carry around umbrellas on Shabbos. Okay, so says the Gemara further now. Tanya Kavase de Rava. We have a Braisa that supports Rava, that Rabbi Yudah That's exactly what Rava said, that the reason we don't bring these dilosos is because the child may become too comfortable, overconfident, and stick out his hands and legs from the vehicle, and then he's going to become tameh. They would bring these certain types of oxen, these Egyptian oxen that had really wide bellies, and the children would sit on their backs, and they would carry the kol shalevin in their hands. When they would get to the shilach, yardu, they would go down from the animal, malum, they would fill up the water, they'd go back on the animal, and they would sit on their backs. So it says, wait a second, we just said that Rabbi Yehuda holds that an oval, that's asimidei adam, is always considered an oval, even if it's very tiny. And an oval, even an oval asimidei shemayim could be considered an oval if it's more than a melo egrof. A mita is kama egrofim, so it meets the size requirement. And by the way, it's also asimidei adam. And Rabbi Yehuda says that they used to sleep under a bed, bifnei zakenim, and the zakenim didn't say anything about it. The Zakenim didn't say a word to them. And Rabbi Yehuda was trying to prove a point that sleeping under a bed in a sukkah, you're yotzei the mitzvah. Why yotzei the mitzvah? Apparently, because the bed is not considered an ohel. Well, why isn't the bed considered an ohel? By Rabbi Yehuda's own definition of ohel. So says Gemara, answer number one, shiny mita hol gaba asuya. No, a bed is different because it doesn't count as an ohel, since the function of the bed is to serve to utilize the area on top of the bed, not to utilize the area underneath the bed. And therefore, it's not considered an oval because it's made the same reason why if you unfold the folding chair, that's not considered that you made an oval, because the folding chair is not meant to protect what's underneath it. It's meant to use what is on top of it. So it's not considered an oval. So says Mar Shvarm Nami L'Gaban Asuyim. But the oxen themselves are also made L'Gaban. And apparently Rabbi Yehuda considers that to be an oval. So Kiyas Ravin Amre Blazer Shaini Shvarim Holam Aginim Al Aroim B'cham Ne'acham B'cham Ne'acham. Who says the oxen are only meant to be sat on top of? Maybe the oxen are used also for protecting that which is underneath them. Apparently, shepherds who had a lot of confidence, I guess, would sometimes, if it was raining, would crawl under the ox in order to protect themselves from the rain or from the sun if it was too sunny outside. So they would use the ox as an ohel. So iachi mitanami. So a bed also serves that function also. Hol magina al menalim v'sandalim shetachtel. The bed protects on the menalim v'sandalim that are underneath the bed. The Gemara Maseches Bava Basra tells us that you can tell the difference between bed of an Amah Aretz and a bed of a Talmud Chacham. That a bed of a Talmud Chacham has menalim b'yimos ha-geshamim and sandalim b'yimos ha-chama. That you look underneath the bed, all it has is winter shoes in the winter time under the bed and summer shoes in the summertime. But a bed of an Amah Aretz is like an Otzer Baldom. It's like a warehouse. It's full of tons of things that are being stored under the bed. Meaning it's saying that a person who has a lack of Seder in his life is unlikely to become a Talmud Chacham. That a person needs to have a Masuder mind and to have a certain amount of Seder in his life in order to be a clear thinker to become a Talmud Chacham. But he uses that same example, Menalim v'Sandalim. That's what's acceptable to have under the bed. To have winter shoes in the winter, summer shoes in the summer. That's what they apparently only one pair of shoes, it sounds like. But that's what they would have under the bed. So, but the point is that the bed is used to protect those items. So why don't we say, just like the shor is considered an ohel on account of the fact that it protects the shepherd when he wants to be protected from the sun and the rain, so let the bed be considered an ohel. Ella amarav shayni shvarim hal vasuim lagin al bnei me'ayim shalhen. Now it's not that the ox protects what's under it; it's that the ox protects its own body, meaning its own intestines. Shenemar oru basu talbisheni ba'atzamos v'gidim tisachecheni. So you see that it's called tisachecheni; that it's called like a schach, that a person that a balchai's skin is actually a schach that protects the inside of its body. The ibay seima, or we could answer that Rabbi Yehuda tamei. Again, we ask, why did Rabbi Yehuda sleep under the bed in the sukkah? After all, lishitaso, it's an ohel. So maybe this is Rabbi Yehuda lishitaso somewhere else. So we said back on daf zayin and beis domer sukkah diras keva beinan. The Rabbi Yehuda is one of the seven or eight tanaim that we identified throughout the masechta that hold that a sukkah has to be a diras keva, because Rabbi Yehuda held that Why was Rabbi Yehuda's Dirus Keva? Because he held that a minimum size of a sukkah is Dalet Amos by Dalet Amos. Sukkah she gavol l'mal mechafam. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was Dalet Amos by Dalet Amos. Rabbi Yehuda old sukkah she gavol l'mal mechafam is kosher. Why is it kosher? Because Dirus Keva be'inan. So since Rabbi Yehuda holds that a sukkah is a Dirus Keva be'inan, v'havli mita Dirus Arai, enochinem, the mita is an oel, but it's only a Dirus Arai. The sukkah oel keva. Sukkah is an oel keva. So v'loasi oel arai, mevatel oel keva. We don't have to worry about an Oel Arai in the context of an Oel Keva. So you want to know, is the person considered that they're sleeping in the sukkah when they're underneath the bed? Yes, because the sukkah is a more substantial kind of Oel than the bed is. Even though in a chinami, the bed is an Oel, according to Rabbi Yehuda. For Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Nami sukkah diras keva b'inan. In fact, the Gemara Rabbi Shimon also holds that a sukkah is diras keva b'inan. Because Vasi Oel Arai and Batal Oel Keva, and yet Rabbi Shimon says, you're not allowed to sleep underneath the bed in the sukkah, so bav pliki. That's exactly the machlokas. Mar savarasi ol arayim vatal ol keva. Mar savarasi ol arayim vatal ol keva. That's the question: whether you're allowed to be under an ol arayim within the context of a sukkah that itself is an ol keva. Where did Rabbi Shimon say that a sukkah is diras keva binan? So we had a machlokas on davav whether you need shtayim kilchasan ushlishis afilu tefach or shalosh kilchasan uraviyas afilu tefach. So Rabbi Shimon was the one that held that raviyas afilu tefach. The Acharon raised the question, the Aruch Nenet raised the question, we could have asked much stronger. Why are we only asking for Rabbi Shimon? You know who else was on that list of people that said that a sukkah is diras keva b'inan? Rabbi Gamliel. Because Rabbi Gamliel holds that a sukkah, Barosh Hagala, Barosh HaSvina, is an invalid sukkah because it's not enough of a diras keva. And Rabbi Gamliel is one that said about Tevi Avdo that look, what a Talmud Chachami is, that he knows to sleep under the bed because he knows that under the bed is not, he's not Yotzei the Mitzvah, he knows that Avadim are apart from sukkah. So, but according to Rabbi Gamliel, that sukkah is diras keva b'inan, we should have asked that you should be allowed to sleep under the bed in the sukkah. Even a bar chiyuva should be allowed to sleep under the bed in the sukkah. So that's why the Aruch Nenet is bothered why we don't pick on Rabbi Gamliel as the shita to question. The answer would still work, the same answer that that the machlokas is whether an Oel Arai is mevatel Oel Keva or not, right? And maybe Rabbi Gamliel holds that an Oel Arai is not mevatel, that it still is mevatel an Oel Keva. So the answer would work, but the Aruch Nenet is bothered why we didn't think of asking the question from Rabbi Gamliel. We're only asking from Rabbi Shimon. So I'm Rabbi Shimon, Maisa B'Tevi Avdo. So we said there was a story of Tevi, the Avid of Rabbi Gamliel. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon, Misichas of Rabbi Gamliel, Lamanu Shnei Dvarim. From the Sicha of Rabbi Gamliel, we learned two things. Lamanu Shavadim Ptur Min HaSukkah. First thing we learn is that Avadim are part from Sukkah. Tos says, I knew that. An Eved is chayiv in all the mitzvahs and Nisha is chayiv. And it's mitzvah shazman grama. So of course an Eved is part from Sukkah. I didn't need Rabbi Gamliel to tell it to me. So he says, Dol tem de chayiv mishum tachsiv teshu kein tedur. Come on. Now there's a havamina that since teshu kein tedur, your avadim need to be out there with you because that's the way you live in the house. And mele that would be mechayiv them in Sukkah. So come ashmulan that the avadim are really part from Sukkah. And second thing we learned, v'laman shayash nachsamita lo yatsi yidei chavaso. That someone who sleeps under a bed in the Sukkah is not yotzi de chayiv, and therefore only Tavi the Eved was allowed to do it, but regular Jewish men are not allowed to do that. So says Gemara, why do we say from Sichasol Shel Rabbi Gamliel we learn this? Vilema Midvarav Shel Rabbi Gamliel. Why not use the more common term from the words of Rabbi Gamliel? Why do we call it the Sicha of Rabbi Gamliel? So says Gemara, Mil Sagav Vorchik Mashmal. Ki Adam Ravach Barad, Varmila Am Ravach Barad Am Rav Amnun Am Rav, Minayin Shafilu Sichas Tamidech Sichas Chulin Shel Tamidech Chacham Shrichon Limud. How do I know that you need to even learn out from the Sichas Chulin of Tamid Chachamim, from just the stam comments that Tamid Chachamim make, Shnemar Valo Lo Yipol, that its leaves do not wither, right? Ki Adam Eitz Hasada, so the eitz represents the person, and the leaves of the tree are called Sichim. That's one of the terms in Hebrew that we call Siach Hasada, right? So you have so even the leaves of the Tamid Chachamim, we assume that the peiros are the Torah, so the leaves are considered the Sichas Chulin of Tamid Chachamim. So there's a lot of Torah to derive even from the Sichas Chulin of Talmidei Chachamim. As Rav Chaim Blashon writes in his commentary in Pirkei Avos, and Rav Chaim, now what do you mean? Talmidei Chachamim don't talk Sichas Chulin. Everything is a halachic discussion. So he says that Sichas Chulin sometimes means even the Hava Amina of a Talmud Chacham. And sometimes Talmud Chacham will give a whole shir, and then at the end he'll realize, wait a second, there's a Maramakam that's against my whole Yisod, and it will unravel the entire shir. But it doesn't mean the shir was a waste of time, because even just from the Hava Amina and from the way of thinking, you can also learn a lot. Says the Mishnah, Hasomik Sukasim If you rest your sukkah on the bedpost, meaning your schach on the bedpost, it's kosher. But Rabbi Yehuda says, no, the schach has to be able to stand independent of the bedposts. Even though you're using the bedposts as the walls of your sukkah, they cannot be what supports the schach. So it says, my time is Rabbi Yehuda. Why not? What's the problem of having the schach being supported by the bedposts? So pligibar Rabbi Zeir of Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal. This is machlok Rabbi Zeir and Abba Bar Mamal. Chadar mnei she'ema keva. One says because the bedposts are too flimsy, they're carried around from one place to the other. Beds are moved around a lot, so it's not something that's kavua enough. The chadar mnei she'ma b'davar mekabel tuma. Ooh, so that's going to be a sugi we should talk about tomorrow. That it's going to be mamid b'davar mekabel tuma. Since the bed is mekabel tuma, you cannot support your schach with something that's mekabel tuma. Maybe now what's enough communion between them? Kigon shenot. Let's say you put metal posts in the ground, and that's what supports your schach. So the manyam v'yishen lakeva, reyesh lakeva, that's very kavula. But if you hold it, you're not allowed to be mamid with the davar makabel tuma. Well, then this would be a problem as well, because you are being mamid with that which is makabel tuma. So Rabbi lo shanu el samach, avol sikech al gabei amita ksheira. The problem is only if it's supporting the schach. But if you just happen to put schach over it, it's going to be kosher. My time, as long as the schach is supported in a substantial way, as long as the schach is being supported by that which is not mekabel tuma, so then you don't have a problem with being mamid b'davar mekabel tuma. I don't know. Maybe we'll start with a brief discussion that tomorrow. Maybe not. We'll see. But there's a lot to talk about in terms of the halacha lemaisa of being mamid b'davar mekabel tuma. Okay, everyone, have a great day.